Last summer, I went back up into the Chilcotin for a couple of weeks of fly fishing. And it was the first time I'd been up there in almost 30 years. And it's changed a lot. Now the road's paved all the way from Williams Lake out. And it's full of tourists out there, and they've got plastic boats and poodles. It wasn't like that 30 years ago. It was a lot more wild. I think it was the summer of 69 when a friend, Brent, and I decided we'd go out and spend a couple of months hiking and camping and hitching from Williams Lake down to Bella Coola. You know, one of the troubles with telling stories from your own life is it's all tangled up together. You know, life doesn't stop and start. And so you got to figure out where you want to begin a story and where you want to end the story, what you want to put in, what you want to leave out. And that's not so easy. I could sit here all afternoon and tell you about the Chilcotin in those years. I could tell you about the man and his sons we ran across haying natural meadows way out in the middle of nowhere using only horse-drawn machinery. We stayed a few days and worked with them cutting and raking and haying. Or I could tell you about how we got high accidentally on unknown mushrooms and had dinner conversation with a pack rat. Or I could tell you about shooting dog salmon with Brent's rifle for canning. Not an entirely legal procedure, even back then. Or I could tell you about getting shot at in my turn by a loony old homesteader woman living way back up on Lonesome Lake. Or I could tell you about Luella, who'd lost her mind. Skin as thick as leather, she refused to ever go inside, and even in the depths of the harsh Chilcotin winter, she stayed out, protected only by a little open shelter and a huge pile of filthy rags. But if I told you all that, the story would ramble on and on, like the country itself out there. And then I wouldn't have time to tell you about Diego and the Renegra down in the Caribbean after. So I think I'll limit it and just tell you about learning to ride like an Indian in the settlement of Alexis Creek. Brent was not an easy guy to hitchhike with. He was big and mean looking, beefy, you know. He had long black hair, not real clean most of the time, and deep scars from acne on his face. And on top of that, he was carrying a rifle. Not necessarily the person just everyone would stop for and give a ride to. Back then, as I said, the road was gravel all the way out, and it was narrow, a lot of it was washboard, and hardly anybody wanted to drive it. But eventually, we got a ride with a mail truck as far as Risky Creek. And from there, we headed back into the bush and spent the next month making our way to Alexis Creek. Probably we could have made it a lot quicker, but we were lost virtually all the time back there. There were no landmarks, and using a compass in this heavy, it was heavily treed. And I think there was a troop of psychotic Boy Scouts back in there once, because we'd come on blazes and we go, all right, we found our way. And they just go like this all over. It was very strange. In any case, we lived on some staples we were carrying with us. Grouse I killed with my slingshot, and wild mushrooms we found along the way, some of which almost killed Brent. As a hint, not a good idea to pick wild mushrooms unless you really know what you're doing, which we didn't. Our method was to test them. Oh, those look good, and we'd eat just a little bit. And then if we felt okay the next day, we'd eat a little more, and then a little more, until we finally figured, well, those are okay. But Brent once slipped up, and he just gobbled down some, and they were happened to be not good. It was sad to see a friend like that ill. Of course, better him than me, but nevertheless, sad. When we made it to Alexis Creek, we were flat broke and had to get work for a week painting an old motel that was there. It worked out okay, but the owner screwed us out of almost all our money in the end. But it was strange there. Everybody there was either a cowboy or an Indian. Nobody said First Nations or Aboriginal then, or a logger or Forest Service employee. They thought we were weird. We were the hippie oddballs from outside. On Saturday night, we thought we'd better go down to the local pub that's in the hotel and check it out to see if anything was happening. That was all that was happening in that town. Everybody in the community and from the hills all around was crammed into that bar in a drunken tangle. It was wonderful. Loud, smoky, dark, just the way I liked it back then. It was really rocking. The place was owned and run by a couple of pre-yuppie dropouts from Calgary who had cashed in their city life and were now making their living tapping beer and waiting on tables out there. We got ourselves on the outside of a few beers and started to feel right at home. They had an old native guy working for them. I think his name was Henry. Tall and lank, he only had one eye. The other one was ripped out and his whole side of his face was all scarred up. But in spite of that, he did a great job weaving his way through the drunken crowd with 10 or 12 empty glasses hanging from his fingers. He never dropped a one, because his job was to collect the empty glasses and take them back up to the bar. There was an elegance about him, a steadied elegance, until somebody'd crank up the jukebox with some Creedence Clearwater Revival. Geez, the people back there, they loved old Creedence. And it's like Henry had totally lose track of himself. He'd just dump those glasses down on whatever table was nearby and start to hoop and holler and dance around, carrying on. The whole bar went nuts, hooping and hollering and dancing with them. It was a scene. And then one of those burnt out yuppies had come out from around the bar and kind of go, "Henry, Henry." And Henry would come back to himself and go, oh yeah. And pick up his glasses and go back to work. During the break, he came over to see what was up with Brent and I. And when we were told him we were going down to Bella Coola on the coast, he said, "Oh, that's pretty bad bear country down there. You got a rifle?" Brent said, "Oh yeah, I'm carrying a 30-30. That should do the job all right." And Henry said, pretty small gun. You a good shot? Get him in the eye? How many bullets you got?" Brent said, "Well, we're traveling light, but I got a dozen." Henry said, And then he gave Brent some advice on how to deal with grizzlies. Brent said, "What should we do if we see one?" And Henry said, "Best thing, leave them alone. They're mean." And Brent said, "Yeah, but they're coming for us." "Oh, you got to shoot them quick. They're fast and mean, and they'll fall down. But don't you think you've killed that grizzly? He's coming for you through the bushes, and he's got mad in his mind. You stay where you were, you're history. You've got to run over to there and wait. And that grizzly don't see you. He stand up and look for you, and you shoot him again. Don't you wait there, he's not dead. You run over to here, and he goes to where you were. He don't find you, he stands up and look, you shoot him again. And you keep staying ahead and shooting him till he don't stand up no more. Then maybe he's dead. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's pretending." Brent said, Henry went back to work and things started to get hazy after that as the beers piled up on us. One of the local women seemed to take a liking to Brent. She was, I guess, 60, 65. Couldn't have been more than 4 foot tall, but weighed in at a good solid 180 pounds. She had a few teeth that were stained brown with tobacco juice, some of which was dribbling down her chin, and she didn't seem too particular about bathing. She called herself Bubbles and seemed to have a preference for sitting on Brent's lap. At one point, Brent said to me, "You gotta help me. I don't know what to do." It startled me. And I said, "Brent, you're almost 25 years old and you're telling me you don't know what to do?" No, I know what to do that way, but I don't want to do it and I don't know how not to." "Brent, this complaining does not suit you. Give thanks that you have the gift of attracting women wherever you go. You're no beauty yourself. I'm alone. You don't hear me complaining." He brightened and clutched at straws. "That's right, you are alone. Let me introduce you." I had to stop that line of thought in a hurry. "Brent, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Think, man, you can't pass her along like an old boot. Think of her feelings. But as I looked at Bubbles slouched in his lap, it wasn't clear to me that she was feeling much of anything at all. I never found out what happened between them. I know they disappeared about the same time together, but the next day when I asked Brent, he just smiled and wouldn't talk about it. And Bubbles, when I saw her, looked pretty happy too. But I had troubles of my own. A young native guy I'd become acquainted with in the urinals was now sitting at our table and wanting me to go out for a horseback ride with him. It's almost midnight. Pitch black out there, no moon at all, and we're almost blind drunk. Horseback riding did not seem like such a good idea. But he kept insisting, and I said, "Yes, brother, we'll go any minute. Let's just finish these few beers. We don't want to lose any bar time." And that's how it went all night. Charlie kept inviting me to go out for a ride, and I kept saying, "Just after these two." But finally, it was closing time. We were all out on the road, and Charlie says, "All right, let's ride." What could I do? We stumbled down the steep hill to the riverbank in the dark, and down there we found the two ponies that he'd left, but we only found one bit and bridle. "Don't matter," Charlie said to me. "I'll teach you to ride like an Indian." I know it sounds foolish now, but it made sense at the time, so that's what we did. He tied one end of a short rope to the halter on the side of the horse's head, and I crawled into the saddle. He leapt on his mount, kicked it once in the rib, and went flying up that hill toward the road. I thought I would go more slowly. But it turned out that those two horses were really close friends, and mine did not have any intention of getting left behind. So I, too, went flying up that hill, clutching the saddle horn with one hand and the rope with the other, to hell with style. By the time we made it up to the road, Charlie was in a flat-out gallop through the pitch-black night down the gravel road, and all I could see was sparks off the horse's hooves. My mount was charging right behind. All the riding I'd ever done to that point was on a few trail rides. You know, the kind where the only thing that keeps you awake is a fat horse right in front of you that's farting and shitting every time it has to hump itself up a steep place. But this was a different deal. This critter had spirit. I determined that it was time to show who was boss. I pulled back on the rope. But not being connected to a bit in the front, nothing happened. I pulled back harder. Horse didn't even slow down. So I let go of the saddle horn and grabbed that rope with both hands, hauled back as hard as I could, and hollered, "Oh, you son of a bitch!" Horses apparently follow their heads. Didn't slow down a bit, but now we're galloping around in a circle. When Charlie figured out that we weren't behind him, he came back. And he sat there watching, as though completely puzzled by this white man, who with the whole beautiful world to gallop across, preferred to be going in circles. Eventually my mount, realizing its friend was there, came to a stop. And I said to Charlie, "I'm not going a bit further till I get more control over this damn beast." So to please me, he tied the other end of the rope to the halter on the other side of the horse's head, leapt into the saddle and was gone again, me right behind. I still couldn't slow that sucker down at all, but now I could get him traveling in circles in either direction. Pretty soon, though, I just gave up the struggle and hung on and went flying through the night after Charlie. And after a while, it didn't matter anymore, because it seemed like that animal and I just sort of seemed to want to go in the same direction together. This is a longer story, so I'm going to sit in a chair. This is great. This is really fun. Is anybody here an expert on Greek mythology? Anybody know a bunch about Greek mythology? It's a relief. In Greek mythology, notice the... Oh, wait a minute. Let me change the tape here. Hang on.